Hello, and welcome to the 14th episode of TuneCast, brought to you by the GeekCast Radio Network. I am your host, TFG1 Mike, and today I am joined by Kevin, Professor Boss K Dog. Also, Diana Liu from the 80s Cartoon Podcast is our special guest host. Hello.
Hello.
How's it going?
It's going. How are you guys and gals doing today?
I'm all right. Not super busy, and my arms hurt from painting all day, but other than that, I'm good.
Yes, Kevin is now a new homeowner.
Ooh.
Do now.
I've been painting the priming the bathroom all day, and my arm. I think I just found a muscle that I've never used before.
not your video game muscles.
No. Apparently, there's a painting muscle that I didn't know existed.
Yes. I was actually going to put this show on hiatus just because I'm the type of person that. I want to have the DVDs to be able to do research by watching each show, and I don't have any DVDs of Gem, which is our topic today, Gem and the Holograms. But I said, screw it, whatever. We were going to interview Larry Kenney, who is the voice of Lionel last night, and I was going to do this episode last night, but Kevin had asked me if we could just move it up. Actually, the show may be going bi-weekly now. I just don't know. Just because I know, Kevin, you're extremely busy, and I know me with my whole spending money I don't have issue, you know, getting DVDs sometimes just isn't that opportunistic for me. So we may not have an episode next week. We may have one in 2 weeks. Just not really sure. Last night was a blast. Oh, my God.
Yeah, last night was awesome. Larry Kenney is a stand-up guy.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I was a little bit jealous when you guys told me who you interviewed, so.
Yeah, and he was very cool about it. I mean, we talked to him for at least a half hour.
Oh, yeah, at least. Actually, it should have already been up. By the time this episode goes up, it will be online, but as of this recording right now, it's not online. It's actually sitting waiting for Steve to download it. Steve is my other friend, and he's the co-founder with me for GeekCast Radio.
I'll have to make sure I download it as well.
Yeah. Oh, also, GeekCast Radio now has a toolbar that people can download for their web browsers, Firefox, Safari, or Internet Explorer. And in that toolbar, you'll find links to our main page, our forums, you'll find a search bar. You'll also find an MP3 player, which will allow you to stream anywhere on the net that you go, because it'll be downloaded into your browser. You can stream any episode that has already been released. So that way, if people don't want to download four-hour podcasts, they can just send them through the internet. So I think we're going to get into today's show topic, which is Gem and the Holograms. Up next, we will get the history lesson. It is now time for the history lesson. Take it away, Professor.
Hello, nerds. This is Professor Boss K-Dog, and it is indeed time for another history lesson. For episode 14, we're taking a look back at the widely popular cartoon Gem and the Holograms. Gem is an American animated television series that ran from 1985 to 1988 in U.S. first-run syndication. The show is about music company owner Jerrica Benton, her singing alter ego Gem, her band the Holograms, and their adventures with their rival band, The Misfits. Gem was arguably the first cartoon series directly affected by the style and substance of the MTV cable network. The series' principal attraction was with preteen girls who entertained notions of showbiz careers, and Gem certainly catered to this demographic group with its flashy costumes, garish lighting effects, and mock MTV rock videos. But the series was very careful to warn the more impressionable fans of the pitfalls and dangers of professional entertaining. The best Gem episodes took a cold eye and trenchant look at dishonest business managers, manipulative record executives, bought lawyers, false friends, and empty promises. This harsh approach to the realities of the business gave Gem a mature edge that previously fluffy rock band series like Josie and the Pussycats lacked entirely. Gem began as a component of Marvel's Super Sunday in September 1985. Within a few months, a song from the series, Truly Outrageous, had scored a major hit with the junior high crowd. By May of 1986, Gem was permitted to branch out into its own weekly half-hour independent of Super Sunday. And in the fall of that year, it was syndicated on a daily basis. The series lasted for the first two-run seasons, retaining its freshness and showbiz savvy despite the dip in animation quality and reliance upon fantasy tune cliches forced upon the producers by the intensified production schedule. Some of the Gem episodes were recycled as part of Marvel's syndicated Maxi's World in 1989, while the original series endured in cable syndication where it flourished until 1993 as part of the USA Network weekend lineup. The show lasted for a total of 65 episodes. All right, let's move on to the rest of the episode. This has been The Professor, and class is dismissed.
Yes, we're going to go directly into general memories. As I've said before, it's easier for me to combine these because I pretty much doubt that we're going to have a lot of general memories for this show, and a one-minute clip really isn't that much.
Right.
I guess I'll go first. I remember watching this show. I've been watching it on YouTube several episodes between now and about 2 weeks ago. I like the stories. I really don't like the music video interludes.
Oh, boo.
Come on. It caters to everybody. Even it should even cater to you.
No,
Oh, he's pretty picky with his cartoons.
I am not. Shut up. The hell's wrong with you?
The music videos are the best part.
Whatever. To each their own. As I said before off air, this wasn't something that I often sat down to really watch. It was something like if it was on, it was on. Honestly, I think I remember seeing it back to back, either in front of or behind Mask.
Yeah, it was on. Sometimes partnered with that, I believe.
Yeah. That's really why I remember seeing it. And you know, the story is, you know, the episodes were pretty good. I only remember watching like the first or second season.
I gotta say, I was a very musical child. I still am a very musical person. And, I just love the way that they incorporated the music videos into it. And even though I didn't watch it a ton when I was young, I was too busy watching, like you said, Mask, G.I. Joe, Turtles, and other things like that. But I do appreciate the fact that this was a very unique series because for the female audience, you usually only had more like preschoolish type cartoons geared towards female audience. I mean, your Rainbow Bright and Strawberry Shortcake and stuff. And Gem offered something that really hadn't been available for a long time, which was a cartoon for the teenage female audience. So I appreciate that.
That's one.
Yeah, I have to say I loved Gem. Growing up, I watched a couple. You know, I watched a couple shows now, and I watched it growing up a little bit. And it does cater to, you know, girls. I have to say, watching it even now, I'm like, you know, I want to be a Gem girl even now. I'm 25, but you know, Gem was pretty outrageous.
Yeah, and the songs are just. I thought the songs were really catchy. I mean, I had a couple friends, one of which who was kind of obsessed with Gem. And she had just downloaded the entire series onto her iPod, and we had hooked it up and we were watching it on TV. And I mean, every time the songs came on, even though I don't remember watching the shows that much, the songs kind of still stuck in my head a little bit.
The songs that were in the shows, because every single show has to have a couple songs in it. The ones in the shows, they were okay, but the actual like beginning and the outro song, I thought were catchy.
Oh yeah. And that's one of the reasons why I wanted to have you on is because when we first started doing TuneCast, Kevin had mentioned, oh, we should bring some of the more, you know, shows aimed towards girls so we don't seem like, you know, just guys talking about guy cartoons. I'm like, all right, fine. Like, you know, we're talking about pretty much an all-girls cartoon. Why not have a girl on? Because if not, we're going to look like sexist pigs.
Yeah. Well, yeah, no, I loved, you know, even watching over this past week, I really don't want to really admit how much Gem I've watched, but it ranges in the hours.
Yeah, I almost bought the DVDs on Amazon, but I knew they weren't going to be here in time for the recording, so I put them in my save cart, but yeah, I don't know. And that's something we'll get to later, the DVDs. Overall, I think it's a great show. I don't know. I think the reason why the music videos really don't resonate with me now is because some of them are from the evil group, which is the Misfits, and I really didn't care for them. So, do we have any other general memories?
Nope, not for me. Good show. I remember my sister watching it a lot more than I did, though.
I was an only child, so I had to watch whatever was on. So, so we're move on. Unless Diana, did you have anything else?
Oh no, I'm good. Thought it was great. So,
all right, we're gonna move on. It is now time for the characters and voice actors. How are we gonna do this, Kevin?
I think we can just hit on some of the main ones and just talk about the characters first, and then we'll just do a little brief synopsis of some of the major voice actors that. Helped out.
Yes. I guess starting with the, quote-unquote, heroes, you have the Holograms. Jem is the lead vocal. Jem is the leader of the Holograms, the most popular singer of her day. She is the alter ego of Jerrica Benton, owner of Starlight Music. Jerrica also runs Starlight House, a home for foster girls. Using the power of Synergy, an incredibly powerful holographic computer with extremely advanced audiovisual synthesizer technology, Jerrica can become Jem by touching her special star-shaped earrings. The Jem Star earrings while saying Showtime Synergy. Jem changes back to Jerrica by saying show's over Synergy. Primary storyline of her and of the series involves her hiding her identity from others, especially Rio. I don't know how to say his last name and I don't really care. No, I don't know. I'm not even going to try. I butcher enough names on our shows. Who loves both Jem and Jerrica. Although being Jem lets her indulge in fun side, she is still a serious Jerrica at heart. The Holograms often tease her about being reluctant to take vacations, and once after nearly driving Rio away, she blurted out to him, "I never seem to do anything right." The character was voiced by Samantha Newark, and her singing voice was recorded by Britta Phillips.
All right, some of the other Holograms that we had Kimber Benton, who is Jerrica's younger sister. She's the primary songwriter. We had, let me see if I say this right, Aja. Mm-hmm. Is that how you say it?
Yeah,
Aja.
Okay. The Asian-American foster girl who grew up with the other Holograms at Starlight House. And then you had Shayna, the African-American foster girl who grew up with Kimber and Jerrica and Aja. And Raya, who is the talented Hispanic-American drummer of the Holograms. So you definitely had a very cultural diverse group of Holograms.
We do need to mention that Raya is not one of the original members. She won a contest, a nationwide talent search, beating close competitor Craig Phillips, who is Stormer's brother, who is Stormer is one of the Misfits, in a drum duel. So she is not one of the original Holograms. It's Kimber, Aja, and Shayna were the originals.
Gotcha. I don't know, just real quick about the Holograms, if I had to pick a favorite one of them, I know this seems kind of the lame way out of it, but I definitely like Jem better than the rest of the Holograms. I know she's the main star, so that's an easy choice, but I didn't really care for most of the other, even her little sister I didn't like as much as I liked her.
I like Kimber sometimes, but it just depended on when I saw it.
Yeah, Kimber kind of had a snappy attitude, and, you know, my opinion is I do like Jem the best because she gets to change into different outfits all the time, go back to Jerrica, go back to Jem. She got to, you know, touch her earring, and, you know, it'll just all come together all at once, so
yeah.
I like Jem the best.
I actually think I should take that back. I was kind of considering Jem and Jerrica the same person. I did like Jerrica better than when she was Jem, though.
Mm-hmm.
Even though I liked the music, I liked her as Jerrica a little better.
Yeah.
Yeah. I actually just like Jem just because it is flashy, and you know, when you're a young girl, that's what you care about.
Exactly.
I'll let Kevin handle the villains.
Obviously, the villain was the arch rival band, the Misfits, led by first Phyllis Pizzazz Gabor, who is a lead vocal and guitarist. She's a spoiled rich girl who basically is leading the group. Then we had Roxy, who's a bassist and a backup vocal. She's a tough-as-nails bassist, basically a high school dropout. We had Stormer, which was a guitarist and backup vocal. She's the primary songwriter of the Misfits and basically the creative force behind the group. And then we had Jetta, who is the newest Misfit. When Stormer suddenly heard music blaring in a seedy dance club, Jetta, a conceited pathological liar, is originally from England. And then we had Eric, who's the main villain of the series, a greedy and manipulative music exec.
Yes, I do have to say, if you took RC out of her robot body, she would be Stormer, since it is Susan Blue that does voice her.
Yeah.
Yeah. I could not stand the Misfits.
Yeah, it's kind of hard to like the bad guys. I mean, some of the cartoons we've looked at in previous episodes, you know, the bad guys have had a real good crew that we almost like better than the good guys. But for this one, it's hard to like the Misfits better than the Holograms.
Yeah, and the Stingers, honestly, I don't even know why I even have them on here, because I don't even remember them. I don't even remember seeing episodes with them. I only remember Jem and the Holograms and the Misfits. I don't even remember these people.
I didn't mind Stormer and Jetta, but I just didn't like Pizzazz for sure, and I didn't like Roxy at all.
Pizzazz at all, yeah.
Yeah, out of these girls, I probably like Stormer the best, just because I thought she looked the coolest. But all the and she was the nicest one out of all of them.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But these girls, I don't know. They're some pretty troubled teens. I don't know how much you guys actually ended up watching, but these girls, I mean, they were just mean bitches. They would slap people. There was one time where they stole a bulldozer just in one of the beginning episodes, and they just would do anything just to stay on top. So
it's kind of like the prototypical the popular girls when you're in junior high in school, how mean they are to each other. I mean, as a junior high teacher, I see that a lot, and they so represent some of those, you know, just the bitches in the school.
Yeah.
That just tear other people apart just for no reason.
Yeah, I agree.
And even though I'm not a Lindsay Lohan fan, and even though I've never seen this movie, you could basically compare the movie Mean Girls to The Misfits.
Oh, kind of. Yeah, that's a good reference there, actually.
The Stingers, as I said, I don't even remember I don't even remember this group. Honestly, I don't.
That's because it wasn't introduced until season 3, probably.
Yeah, and I think I was done with the show by then.
I don't believe I was around that long.
No, I don't think I was either. So it'd be fine with me if we just completely skipped over them.
Yeah, I don't remember them at all. I just remember the Misfits.
Right.
At least we mentioned that they exist.
Yeah, they exist, but we don't care that they exist. The additional characters, you had Synergy, who is an extraordinarily sophisticated holographic computer designed to be the ultimate audio-visual entertainment synthesizer. Synergy was created by Emmett Benton and is in many ways considered to be his life's work. Of course, this is the computer that gives Jem her powers and everything else. Because as we all know, YouTube has to break up episodes of what they put on there. In the third part of Battle of the Bands, I thought it was very interesting, and I know this is actually on the actual show part, but I thought it was very interesting that Jem had thrown one of her earrings in the ground outside of a warehouse that they were being taken into. And when they went to escape, she had Synergy do all this, you know, showing lights and have police show up and everything else. And I thought that was cool how they actually did that. I don't know.
Yeah. You also had Rio, who was basically Jerrica's longtime childhood friend and boyfriend. He's kind of a secret, angry type guy who it never seemed like they matched up too well to me. But you know, he is her boyfriend, so he's obviously a main character.
I don't know if this is correct or not in me saying this, but I think he was the only guy in 80s cartoon lore that has purple hair.
That just made him so much more cute. Yeah, no, Rio, I mean, he was just that guy who was there just so, you know, you have a love interest. And mm-hmm. I mean, all the main characters had different colored hair besides, you know, some of the Misfits where they had just, you know, like brown hair or blonde hair and white hair. But just him having, you know, purple hair, I mean, kind of just because Jem is just so 80s, I think they had to do something.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
So I don't know if you guys know. I'm going to just ask a general question. Did you know if Jem ever told Rio or if Jerrica ever told Rio that she was Jem?
Don't remember.
I don't recall that ever happening, but if it did, it probably happened at the third season, which I wasn't watching.
Yeah. See, I want to know. I'm just so into Jem right now.
Yeah, I don't know. That might be a question that we'll have to look up later on and or watch some of the... I would assume if they did that ever, it would have to be in the last couple episodes.
Yeah. I mean, unless it was something like... unless it was something like, you know, bringing him into the fold of sharing the secret, but in his character profile it says that he does not like secrets. It doesn't give reasons why. The show never went into why he doesn't, but I believe I remember reading that somewhere.
Yeah.
The rest of these supporting characters, I really don't remember any of them outside of, outside of Howard Sands, who was the guy who had the mansion in the very beginning, who created the Battle of the Bands concert between the Holograms and the Misfits.
Right. Yeah, I don't remember many of the side characters besides the actual Misfits and the Holograms on this one. And
then, there was Zipper, the henchman, who would do all of that...
Raymond's dirty work.
Yeah. I don't know if you guys noticed, but in the first season, he had, like, blonde hair, and in the second one, he had brown hair and looked nothing like he did in the first one. but you know, they had to make him more appealing towards, you know, little girls like me, so...
Right. And then I think the last thing we can mention as far as characters go is the Starlight Girls, which is the name given to the foster girls Jerrica and the Holograms care for. There was 12 of them. Not going to name them all, but they all appeared in different episodes throughout the series.
Yeah, I think the only one that actually mattered, I don't remember her name, but she was just the one who actually teamed up with the Misfits for a little bit and just... you know, caused a whole ruckus with Jim because she was kind of, you know, felt like she was an outcast with the Starlight Girls and, you know, actually went to the Misfits and, and they kind of manipulated her to help themselves.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. You want to move into some of the people doing the voices?
Yeah, we can. Go ahead.
No. Well, I was just going to say, there's a few people that just bounce off the page at me, even though they weren't necessarily doing main voices. With the exception of Susan Blue, who had a couple main roles, and Charlie Adler, who was all over the place on this show. But just some of the other ones to mention, you had Townsend Coleman, Cass Soucy, Noel North, Neil Ross, Wally Burr, Dan Gilvezan. So you had quite a few people helping out doing littler roles here. But I think the biggest voice for me as far as doing a lot of work on this one was Charlie Adler.
Oh, yeah. It's actually funny that I see Wally Burr's name on the cast list because Wally Burr was the casting director for Transformers.
Right, and the casting director for a lot of shows back in the 80s, as well as appearing and doing some voices in most of those shows as well.
Right. And, of course, we can't go without mentioning Samantha Newark, who was the voice of Jim, and then, as I said before, Britta Phillips was the singing voice. I actually like the speaking voice better than the singing voice, but that's just me.
Yeah, and then for Pizzazz, you had two people. You had Patricia Alice Albrecht, and then you had Ellen Burnfield, one of them doing the voice and one of them doing the singing. So there was three or four characters that had multiple voices for them on the show, either doing voices or the singing work.
I basically watched up to the Battle of the Bands episode, and which is probably just the first three episodes or so, first five episodes maybe. And I really did like the voice cast, even though a lot of them I didn't recognize. I mean, I barely recognized Susan Blue. I mean, I actually had to listen to a line from her, from that character to listen.
Yeah. I think that's got to be a kick-ass job, though, to be the one that, not the one that's actually voicing some of these characters, but to be the one that has to just come in and get to sing the songs and then leave. Like, that is, for me, I would rather be that person than an actual voice actor. If I could go in and just sing songs for a cartoon, that would rock.
Yeah,
no, I agree, because if you there's not any acting in that. You just have
to
sing.
Right, just sing a song.
Yeah, you're already hired for your voice.
Right, and that's the stuff that a lot of the people are going to remember is the song, so I think that would be just an awesome job.
And thank God I didn't watch up to an episode wherever Townsend Coleman was in, because you know, if I had seen an episode with him in it, the only thing I would think of is either The Tick or Sentinel Prime, which I don't want to think about Sentinel Prime.
You Transformer guru.
I know. You are too. Shut up.
I know.
I'm going to go to your house and steal that Matrix set from you, damn it.
No, you're not.
Yes, I am.
The Matrix of Leadership and the G.I. Joe Complete Series are very safely put away right now.
you know, just going down the rest of this list, I don't really recognize anybody.
No, it has a lot of people that weren't doing a whole lot of it doesn't seem like they were doing, and that, this is just coming from, you know, some of my side work over at Behind the Voice Actors. I don't recognize a lot of these names, and I've put up a lot of credits on that site, and a lot of these people either weren't doing stuff before or just didn't do much after. A lot of them, I think this was just kind of a one-time, one main gig, and then maybe they had some minor roles like here and there.
Yeah. Speaking of your work over there, how's that Frank Welker page coming?
Actually, today, the Frank Welker page, just to give everyone a heads up what I'm talking about, Behind the Voice Actors is a place where you can go check out voice actors, and you can click on them, and it shows pictures and get into the audio clips of all the different voices they've done. And I don't have all the audio clips yet, but I have picture credits for Frank Welker that are now numbering over 200.
Oh, Lord.
Over 200 credits for Frank Welker on the page that I'm working on. So everyone else is on the other administrators on the site are doing all kinds of other stuff, and I've just been like stuck on Frank Welker world for like the last month. So you get a chance, go check it out.
So I believe that's pretty much all we have on the voice cast, isn't it?
That's all I got.
All right, so we're going to be moving on. It is now time for the behind the scenes segment. I guess we can start out with the fact that Hasbro hired advertising agency Griffin Bacall, the founders of Sunbow Productions, to create a 65-episode animation series. Griffin Bacall / Sunbow, was, as well as Marvel Productions, had previously created the successful G.I. Joe series for Hasbro. G.I. Joe writer Christy Marks was hired to create the series based on the line of dolls and original concept, which consisted of two girl bands, Synergy, the boyfriend Rio, and the rockin' Roadster. Marks created a full character biographies and relationships, including the love triangle aspect between Rio, Jerrica Benton, and Jim. Starlight Music and Starlight House. You know, as I'm looking through these paragraphs for this information, a lot of names that I remember, or that obviously have done other stuff, Paul Dini, who was on He-Man, as a writer, Buzz Dixon, Michael Reeves, David Wise, and Marv Wolfman, who had also done Transformers stuff, and probably G.I. Joe stuff as well. David Wise would eventually go on to do Teenage Ninja Turtles
right.
stuff. Go ahead.
I was just saying, so they had a pretty good group of writers for the series. It's probably one reason why the stories were a little bit better than some of the other cartoons that were airing in those couple years.
Yeah. And then, of course, the executive producers were Joe Bacall, Jay Bacall, Tom Griffin, and Margaret Lesh, who, you know, the Bacall, father and son, Joe's the father, Jay's the son, and then Griffin, as we all know, is associated with Transformers. And then
G.I. Joe, yeah. You always want to leave out G.I. Joe, but come on.
Well, whatever.
And then we had the voice director veteran that we mentioned before, Wally Burr, and you know, it just had a lot of experienced people that were working with the show, which is probably one reason why it has, you know, had the success and the cult following that it does have. I mean, this is one of those shows, unlike some of the other ones that we've mentioned on, you know, different episodes. This is just as popular, and it has just as big of a cult following as, you know, as some of the G.I. Joe, He-Man, Thundercats, stuff like that. I mean, it's huge with the, you know, the people that grew up on it, especially the female audience.
Yeah, no, I agree. It was basically 80s fashion, everything you wanted in the 80s, just all in a cartoon format for girls.
Yeah. So it was a good idea.
Yeah, you know, and the episodes, you know, the episodes I watched, they were entertaining to where I did end up watching hours of Jim. So, yeah, I thought it was good writing.
Yes, very much so.
So we're all in agreement, good writers.
Yes, very, very good writers. I honestly don't think there's been any writers that we've remembered from show to show since Tooncast has been in existence that we have basically flat out not liked. Same thing.
Except for whoever wrote all the Dexter's episodes.
Oh, shut up.
God, that cartoon sucks.
Shut up.
Okay.
So, getting back to this. Originally, the main character was called Misty and then M, but that idea was dropped because a letter could not be trademarked. The show was originally designed to appeal to both girls and boys with a mix of action, adventure, drama, music, and fashion. It was first slotted as a 6-minute cartoon that aired during Super Sunday or Super Saturday, depending on the market. Along with the male-oriented properties Bigfoot and the Muscle Machines and Robotics and the Inhumanoids, the only female-oriented show in the lineup, Jim proved to be the most popular of the four, as Jim and a total of 65 episodes produced much more than the other shows.
Talk about a couple of losing shows. I'm sorry, Robotics and Bigfoot and the Muscle Machines were just complete crap. Inhumanoids was all right, but...
You know, and then I'll catch Inhumanoids at weird times on Boomerang, but it's like, what the hell is this? And click, straight over to TV.
Yeah.
Were you going to say something, Diana?
Oh, yeah. Well, I can see how the show was originally designed for both boys and girls, because it actually does have a lot of action in it.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, just because Jem is being kidnapped all the time. They're putting bombs in places, and they're just trying to mess Jem up whenever they can. So I can see why, you know, it was kind of designed for both boys and girls. But with all the flashy lights and all the clothes and, you know, the hair and everything, I see how it's just an all-girl show.
You know, I just thought of something, too. I was mentioning before that there wasn't a lot of shows oriented for this age group for the females. I just thought of one. And the only other one I can think of besides Jem, which was not nearly as popular or as well done as Jem, was She-Ra. I don't...
Excuse me?
What?
What do you mean it wasn't nearly as well done?
It wasn't nearly as well done as Jem was. I mean, those were the two cartoons I can think of that were aimed at the older audience of the female audience, but... I think Jem was done a little bit better than She-Ra was.
It's targeted marketing, just because, you know, girls aren't going to be into action too much, yeah. But girls are going to love makeup and hairspray.
Right, so that's why it was a little more successful, is what I'm saying, than She-Ra is, because even though they both kind of tried to appeal to both boys and girls,
yeah.
Jem did a better job because it focused more on the girl aspects of what they would like, whereas She-Ra tried to be for girls, but it was focusing on things that more guys would like.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah, I completely agree. I would rather, you know, be a famous singer instead of kicking ass somewhere and having to work.
We've pretty much already gone over the writers. Christy Marks, who created the series, wrote 23 episodes. And then, as we said before, David Wise, Buzz Dixon, people like that have done G.I. Joe, Transformer stuff. So I think, unless we have anything else, we're just going to go straight into the actual show. And, wow, I actually remembered what the title of that segment is this time.
You've been doing good. You've had a couple in a row.
Yeah, I've had about 3 episodes in a row. Half the time I end up forgetting what the title of that segment is. The central secret of Jem, of the series is that Jem is in fact the alter ego of Jerrica Benton, owner and manager of Starlight Music, who adopts this persona with the help of Synergy, a holographic computer designed to be the ultimate visual entertainment synthesizer built by her father, Emmett Benton, who left it to her on his death. The other holograms are Kimber Benton, Jerrica's younger sister, keyboardist, and main songwriter for the band. Which we've pretty much already gone through all this.
Yeah, I think mainly with the show, just for those people that aren't familiar with it or maybe don't have as good a memory of it, I mean, the show was always an adventure, you know, throughout the whole half hour, and it was usually sprinkled in with, if I'm not mistaken, at least
two or three music videos.
So you had at least two or three, you know, original music videos sprinkled in the show. Was there any other parts or things that they did on a consistent basis that any of you guys can think of? Besides the music videos?
And I said that, you know, Jem gets kidnapped almost every other episode. No.
Yeah. Besides them being outrageous.
Yes. Kevin had mentioned outrageous to me a couple episodes ago. I might have been episode 12 or 13. I don't know. He had said outrageous, and actually, Jem wasn't the first thing that popped into my mind. It was Aquaman from Batman, the Brave and the Bold, because he says that as well, and I just completely missed the reference.
Yeah, I was trying to give you a reference there.
Yeah, it didn't work.
Yeah, I don't think I've said, you know, in the course of my whole life, this week has been the only week I've ever used the term outrageous. And I have probably said that about everything. I make dinner, and I'm like, that is just fucking outrageous.
We can go into a few of the trivia things, I think, and then, you know, see if we have any other thoughts about the actual show. But according to interviews with show creator Christy Marks, while all of the holograms' first names were already chosen by Hasbro, obviously the creator of the toy line, she gave them all last names that corresponded to scientists who were at the time working on holographic technology. So a little tie-in there. And similarly, she named villain Eric Raymond after her own brother.
Yeah.
So she did get to name a few of the characters herself.
Spiteful. She sounds spiteful.
And then another one here. The character reporter Hector Ramirez would appear in various TV shows made by Sunbow. Besides appearing in Gem, Hector Ramirez appeared in episodes of G.I. Joe, Inhumanoids, and Transformers.
I don't remember him seeing him in Transformers.
I remember seeing him, but I didn't remember that. I didn't realize that he was the same one in all those shows.
I didn't even know. In one scene where people are watching several television screens, you can see a news report of an attack by the Inhumanoids, or monsters from a show of the same name, also produced by Sunbow. After M was ditched as the name of Gem, several other names were tested before the final names were decided upon. Gem was Misty, Jericho was Morgan, Kimber was Aja, Aja was Jade, Stormer was Roxy, and Roxy was Rue.
That's just confusing.
That's right. And the Rocking Roadster toy contained a real working FM radio. I remember seeing commercials for that.
I don't.
No, that's the only reason why I remember seeing the commercials for that is the fact that it had a real working radio. Because back then, it's not like today where you have iPods and iPhones and MP3 players and digital music and, you know, you basically, you know, do a PS9 and plug your video game system into your head. You know, there wasn't that stuff in the 80s at all.
Right. Has one error that happened in season 3 when Gem and the holograms get a ransom note. The first line quite obviously reads "In search of good times," but when they read it, they all say "In search of good tunes." So just a little error there. What do you guys have any other comments about the actual show? Things that you remembered from, you know, the style of the show, or things that you liked or disliked about it, besides Mike's dislike of the music videos?
We'll let Diana go first. We'll throw her into the bus.
All right, well, what I did like about it were, you know, I did love the toys, because you get, you know, outrageous wigs. You also get makeup. You also get, yeah, like the Rockin' Roadster actually did have an FM radio, and back then that was the shit.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I thought it was pretty cool. If you wanted to be popular, you know, the toys and just everything about it was the way to go if you were a young adolescent girl teen.
Yes.
Like myself.
Yes. And I honestly don't think it would take the place of Barbies, but I always associated with Jim with Barbies as the same thing, because I had a bunch of girls cousins that were girls, so they would always have those toys, and I would always get them mixed up. But anyway,
I just remember always watching the show, and even though the stories were good and the writing was pretty good, I unlike Mike, I was always waiting patiently for just the next music video to happen. It's kind of like what was the episode? What was the show that we did earlier on? I don't know if I'm thinking about Animaniacs or whatever, but where you just were always waiting for that next song or something like that to happen. And that's what I remember as far as watching this show, that I was always anxious for the next music video.
Now, I must clarify, though. I'm talking about now watching it. I can't stand the music videos.
See, even watching it like a couple months ago, I was still anxious to watch the next music video.
No.
Yeah, I'm not going to lie. I'm going to keep watching Gem after this.
Yeah.
Boy, we've created a monster.
Yeah. Well, their music videos I thought were kind of pretty rad, just because, you know, they're flying through space on a star, or, you know, they're at a concert just doing all these costume changes. So I don't know. I was born in the 80s, and I love the 80s, and this is basically just everything 80s.
Oh, yes, very much so. So we're going to go right into the music segment. What information?
This is what this show is all about. I mean, music was the thing for the show. Without the music, the show is not successful.
No, not at all.
Just naming a couple people that helped out, even if I haven't heard of them, I think it's worth mentioning. The music arranger was Ann Bryant. The conductor was Robert Walsh. And then the singers that we heard most often was Ellen Burnfield, who provided the singing voice for Patricia Alice Albrecht's character, Gordon Grody, who provided the singing voice for Townsend Coleman's character, Britta Phillips for Samantha Newark, and Vicki Sue Robinson for Cass Susie. I should have the actual names of the characters there, but it doesn't. But those were the four people that we most likely heard most of the time actually singing the song. So hats off to those four.
Yes.
And thank God we didn't have to listen to Townsend Coleman sing.
Yeah, really. I just had a bad visual. Sentinel Prime singing. Oh, big fucking chin. Ah! No official Gem soundtrack was ever released, although all but one of the songs were released on cassette in any form were featured in the first season.
Yeah, there's lots of cassettes in there. Most of them were given away as special offers with either mail-ins for the toys or they were packaged with the toys or something like that. But that's got to be a crime that there's no soundtrack for this show. If any show needed a CD soundtrack that should be released, it's this one.
Yes, very much so. I completely agree on that.
Yeah, I actually had the Gem tape because I loved the music. Besides, you know, now that I'm older and I actually, you know what they're saying and actually, you know, can break down the lyrics. It was good, but just the theme songs were so good. Mm-hmm. I think that's probably why, because the songs were okay. Besides the theme songs, they're awesome.
I'm completely shocked that there's not a soundtrack, though. But since you mentioned the theme song, this is one of the greatest 80s theme songs there is. As far as a lot of times I would like to reference my little CD I made, this ranks in the top 15 of cartoon theme songs between 1980 and 1995. This is like number 15, so please, excellent theme song.
It's higher than Silverhawks.
Oh, it's way higher than Silverhawks and Thundercats. It's higher than G.I. Joe, Thundercats, Silverhawks, He-Man, Transformers, all those.
I want to be a Gem girl so bad.
Yeah, but excellent theme song. Great writing.
Yes.
And even if you didn't watch the series, I guarantee you walk up to someone that was around in the 80s or whatever, and you say Gem, they're going to know part of the theme song.
Right.
Like, almost everybody, at least if they don't know the whole thing, they at least know the truly outrageous part.
Yeah.
So, you know, when a song can achieve that and people can still remember parts of it, even if they haven't watched the actual cartoon in like 20 years, that's saying something.
Yeah, and again, this is another show that has that 20, 25, you know, 20 to 25 year franchise now.
Yeah.
I mean, I believe the 25th anniversary is October of next year, I think.
That might be right.
When I was usually when I look at stuff on IMDb, it'll say like shows, it'll say the actual original first air date,
mm-hmm.
And I'll usually remember that stuff, especially if it's like something like Transformers or G.I. Joe or, you know, something that has a 20-25 year history.
Right.
I believe it's October of next year that is the 25th anniversary of Gem.
Yeah, that should be right because we're talking about 1985, October 6, 1985.
Yep, that's what it is. I guess we can move straight into the legacy segment. Basically, this is where, just to let Diana know, this is where we talk about all the stuff that's happened with it, toys, awards,
ratings, rankings.
Yes, which are unfortunately absent. What the hell is wrong with you, you stupid IGN bastards?
Yeah, the IGN list is every week we reference this. I don't know if you're familiar with it. IGN put out a top 100 animated shows of all time, and it's got to be the worst ranking of the top 100 shows I've ever seen anybody do, because it's completely skewed to adult cartoons, it's completely skewed to cartoons that were for males, and it's completely skewed to more recent cartoons. Gem does not appear anywhere in their top 100.
And they
ask
at 98.
Yeah, but I mean, it's just ridiculous. I mean, they have Galaxy High, which was a show from the 80s. I don't know if you guys are familiar with it. They have it in, like, the 50s or the 60s, and that was nothing compared to some of these other shows that didn't make the list. I mean, to not have Gem in your top 100 is your whole list goes out the window.
Oh, yes.
But since IGN didn't want to recognize them, there was a couple people that did recognize them. A couple of Young Artist Awards in 1987. Samantha Newark got nominated for a Young Artist Award, and in 1989 they got nominated for a Best Animation Series from the Young Artist Awards. So,
Then as far as the reference, it's been referenced in stuff like Saturday Night Live, Family Guy, South Park, Sheer Genius in the Dark, Fanboys. It's featured in the I Love the 80s Strike Back, and it's spoofed in Robot Chicken, two episodes of Robot Chicken.
I gotta see that other episode, though. I gotta see the second one where it says we see that Gems apparently let herself go since the 80s. I wanna see what that looks like.
You can probably find it on...
Oh my. How about the Sheer Genius one where there was an elimination challenge involving recreating Gems' hairstyle?
Yeah.
That would be a fun one to see, too.
Yeah, that was the other thing this show did... was it played big on the, you know, the big hair thing of the 80s, which, you know, that was the 80s style, which is fine. I'm not saying anything against it, but it went along with the times in the cartoon. They didn't try to change that at all. Well, up next we have the VHS and DVD releases. In the 1980s, various episodes were released on VHS by Family Home Entertainment in the USA, and released by Tempo Video in the UK. The Glitter and Gold video is the only Gem video to have been released in both USA and UK. On March 30th, 2004, Rhino Entertainment released the complete first and second seasons on DVD in Region 1. On September 14th, 2004, they released Season 3, Part 1, which featured the first 19 episodes of Season 3. Both releases were digitally remastered and contained Dolby Digital 5.1 audio. Rhino subsequently lost the rights to the series before they could release the remaining episodes of Season 3, the final season of the series. In 2008, Hasbro acquired the distribution rights for all Sunbow/Marvel Hasbro-related cartoon series, including Gem.
That means good things, because Rhino sucks. We all know that. And when Hasbro gets hold of something, like we've seen with the G.I. Joe and Transformers, they do things right. So I would expect very highly that there's at least the individual seasons released, if not an entire series released.
Hopefully they will give it to Shout Factory, because Shout Factory has done amazing things with the G.I. Joe stuff and the Transformers stuff.
But just to mention the Rhino releases, just to see what you would get on them if you found them, on the complete first and second season disc, it's 26 episodes. You have an interview with Samantha Newark, who is the speaking voice of Gem, and interviews with the writer-creator Christy Marks. You have commentary on four episodes by Christy Marks. You view all the music from the show in order, uninterrupted. That makes it worth it, actually.
Ooh.
And some excerpts from the Gem Bible, the series Bible. And then Season 3, Part 1, which is obviously the only one that was released for Season 3, you have commentary tracks on a couple episodes. You have interview with the singing voice of Gem, Britta Phillips, interviews with the writers, and a commentary track for one of the episodes, and just some other little features.
B-roll footage and play songs footage are a feature. In September 2004, Cartoon Network Australia bought the TV rights to Gem and aired the show for 10 months on their classics network, Boomerang. Australia also had the first and second season of Gem released on DVD. The current status of the franchise. Almost 20 years after the toy line was introduced to the U.S. market and 17 years after its demise, Hasbro has shown some legal activity in maintaining their trademarks and intellectual property, leading some fans to believe that they may be reviving the line via the trademark renewal for dolls, doll clothing and doll accessories, board games, jigsaw puzzles, publications, namely coloring books, activity books, comic books, paperback, and hardcover storybooks.
Et cetera.
Yeah, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. It's just a whole list. Hasbro has also registered four domain names that are Gem-related. JerichaBenton.com, which redirects to Hasbro's homepage, ShowtimeSynergy.com, GemMovie.com, and GemAndTheHolograms.movie.com. These three do not redirect. Hasbro has not released the licensing for the DVD sales as of spring 2009. The unofficial statement from Hasbro is that they are waiting to concentrate on the other titles at this time, Transformers, G.I. Joe, as of September 2009. The Gem series has not been released in any further DVDs. Christy Marks has long expressed a desire to make a modern-day revival of the animated series, but stated that in a 2004 interview, there are a great deal of complications concerning the rights to the Gem properties. This is a direct quote from her. I would like to see this happen. I don't want to go into a lot of detail. The whole rights situation for Gem is very, very complicated. Believe me, if there were a simple, straightforward way to do it, it would be done. But there are some very big complications that are in the way at the moment. I know shows have complications all the time with musical rights, stuff like that. If Hasbro owns it, I mean, if they own the intellectual properties for this thing, why can't something happen?
Yeah, I would be, if I were as a betting person, I would say when the Hasbro channel comes out next year, that there will be something, either a new version of Gem that is part of that lineup, and I wouldn't be surprised if it was a part of it from the get-go, because they're going to have to launch that channel with some big things, and I would think that it would just make sense if you're going to try to reel in the boy audience, you're going to, you know, throw out some type of Transformers cartoon or a G.I. Joe type cartoon, and it seems like it would be an obvious choice to redo some type of Gem cartoon for the girls when that Hasbro channel launches next year.
Oh, yes. Especially with the network formerly known as Cartoon has now gone away from friggin' cartoons.
I hate that, just like MTV. No music videos.
Yeah,
just reality TV.
I'm just keeping my fingers crossed that when the Hasbro channel comes out, they're going to do things right, but who knows.
Yeah, we can all hope. So I believe that's it for the Legacy segment.
Except for that there have been rumors of a Gem movie coming out.
Yeah. There have been rumors, but they are just rumors. Again,
but if you combine that with the fact that they have GemMovie.com and GemAndTheHolograms.com have been domain names registered by Hasbro, it seems like it's a little more than just rumors.
Yeah, but I think that it still could be considered a rumor only because, as we just said, there are serious rights issues, and as you said, maybe nothing will happen until the Hasbro channel launches next year. So.
Yeah, I just think with the success that some of these live action movies have been having, Transformers, G.I. Joe, and a couple other ones, we're going to see a ton of 80s cartoons being turned into movies now. I mean, it's just a matter of time.
Yes. And I personally would love if they did a Gem cartoon.
Yeah, even a modern version would be awesome. And you would think that it would be a ripe market for it with all the young girls that are into, you know, like the High School Musical scene and some of these other musical type shows that are out there. A modern version of Gem would seem to be right up those girls' alleys.
Oh, wow. I just had a flash of who could play Gem.
Uh-oh.
In live action, not in
okay.
Action. Ashley Tisdale.
Ashley Tisdale, that's what I was thinking too.
Nothing wrong with that.
That's scary. So I believe that's it for the show. We're going to go into the closing here in a minute. So I think I'm going to put some ads in. I actually got the audio for the Be Right Back and Now Back too, so there'll probably be some ads in between here and the closing. So we'll be right back.
We'll be right back after these messages.
Thank you all for being here today. I've called this press conference on behalf of myself, Ron Algar-Watt, and my co-creator, Matt Robotham, to inform you that once the current run of our award-winning webcomic, Vengeance of the Interman, is finished at the end of this year, we are hereby retiring from comics. No more webcomics for us. So that's why we brought you here, and we will now take your questions.
Al. There's no one here.
There's nobody here.
There's nobody here. Nobody read the comic.
Oh.
At all.
Oh.
Ever.
Well, we're doing a podcast now.
Yeah, we are doing a podcast now.
The Sarcastic Voyage Podcast. Available via iTunes or on the web at algar.com.
Thank you for joining us here on TuneCast. There are several ways you can get in contact with us or leave feedback for the show. The first is you can visit www.geekcastradio.com and find all the other GCRN podcasts there. The second is that you can stop by www.predaconempire.com/CafeSpark, which is our forums. You can get all our GCRN/Transformers discussion topics there. The third is you can leave the show feedback on iTunes. Yes, please do this. I checked it before the show, before this recording. We actually had 3 reviews, and it's up to 5 stars. So please, keep giving the good feedback. The fourth is you can visit the earth-2.net forums and find our threads for the shows in the self-promotion section. And the fifth is the email address, which is gcrntunecast@gmail.com. You can also follow us on Twitter. The show name there is gcrntunecast. Mine is TFG1 Mike, and what are your all's Twitters? Kevin, you can go first.
Mine is Boss K Dog. It's BossKDawg.
I actually remembered it this time.
That's right.
Yeah, and mine is just Diana Lou. DianaLuu.
Okay. We hope you enjoyed this episode of TuneCast and wish that you'll join us next time when we will be reminiscing on Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. No, not the 2003 series, the original 1987 one. For now, I am TFG1 Mike with
Professor Boss K-Dog
and Diana Lou.
Saying the moral words of Optimus Prime, transform and roll out, and thank you for listening. Until next time. Jim is excitement. Ooh, Jim is adventure. Ooh.